91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today we learn about the Florida rules for a prisoner to be released from incarceration. It could be that a full sentence has been served, but there's also clemency, parole, work release, conditional medical release, or even a pardon. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns tomorrow. We'll visit with clemency attorney and Florida lobbyist Reggie Garcia. He's written a short book called How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. Though his book is intended for those facing decisions, it addresses more than 20 years working on such cases. To gain clemency, an inmate and representatives must hurdle 25 steps. Parole is more common, of course. So stay tuned. Topical Currents up next after the news. Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. I'm Bonnie Berman. Joseph Cooper returns with me tomorrow. This hour we visit with Florida lobbyist and clemency attorney Reginald Garcia. We'll learn more about the often complex issues involved in having individuals released from prison. Each year, some 30 to 35,000 felons are released from Florida prisons for varying reasons. Attorney Reggie Garcia has written a book on the subject. It's How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. There are also medical releases. Reggie Garcia joins us from public radio station WFSU in Tallahassee. Welcome to you, Reggie.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And sorry Joe can't be here with us, but we'll do our best. Before we delve into your book, could you tell us a little about you and your background?
Sure. Thank you for having me. And it's a good segue. Your NPR news at the beginning talked about some of the work the Attorney General's doing in community policing. All of these criminal justice issues, we're drilling down on several of them today, but all of these criminal justice issues are very, very hot public policy and legal issues, not just in our state, but nationally now. I've been a lawyer almost 30 years. Grew up in Tampa. My father was in law enforcement. My mother was in medicine, and went to undergraduate and law school at the University of Florida in Gainesville, and have lived in Tallahassee most of the time since then.
And what inspired you to devote your life now to obtaining clemency or parole for incarcerated felons to give them a second chance? When was that change for you? I guess 10 years into your practice?
That's about right. I did my first clemency case, which is one of the release strategies we're going to talk about today, in 1994. Like I said, my father was in law enforcement as a deputy sheriff in Tampa and a deputy fire marshal. I used to literally spend summers at the courthouse watching criminal trials. And although my practice took me more into the regulatory and political area initially, I've always had a fascination with criminal law, because there's so many opportunities, frankly, for people to get overcharged on the front end or longer sentences on the back end. That's not anybody's fault. That's just kind of where we are as a society. So I got involved in this 20 years ago to try and learn more about it, but also to help ex-felons who are just trying to transition and reentry back to a normal life of employment and to being law-abiding citizens.
So to be clear now, today we're not going to be talking about those who are exonerated through new evidence or DNA findings. These are ways of getting parole, clemency, medical, conditional medical release, or work release, correct?
That's right. Although you make reference to the terrific work the Innocence Project of Florida does, and both here and in Florida and their counterparts all over the country, I believe they've released 14 or caused to be released 14 innocent inmates based mainly on new DNA evidence, sometimes witness misidentifications or recantations, or sometimes a combination of the two. Certainly none of those things are precluded from being a clemency or a parole case, but usually right. those are cases that go back with the assistance of Innocence Project of Florida to the circuit and appellate courts.
In your book, How to Leave Prison Early, it's really a how-to guide for navigating this Florida correctional system. How complex is the system for inmates seeking early release, and how does it compare to, let's say, procedures in other states? Is it more complex in Florida?
Well, let's break it down and talk about it one option at a time,
okay.
because they're all a little bit different. The book, and thank you for mentioning it, and it's written, you're right, as a how-to book, almost a college workbook, but at a ninth grade level, for the state prison inmates themselves, their families, their advocates, and their lawyers. And it explores four different options, most of which are not mutually exclusive. Executive clemency is the governor's power to grant mercy under the Constitution, and one type of that is a prison commutation. We'll dive into that a little bit.
Okay.
Parole, although it was abolished by the legislature in 1995, is still available for about 4,600 Florida inmates. Work release, in theory, is available to virtually everybody in the state prison system currently that don't have certain specified very serious felonies or sex crimes toward the end of their sentence, and I think is a very efficient program that has been expanded and should be continued to be expanded.
The work release.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the fourth one, which is the least known, frankly, is something called conditional medical release. The Florida Parole Commission, which now has a new name called the Florida Commission on Offender Review, any two of those three commissioners can vote to release a very sick inmate, and the legislature's given them specific criteria on how to implement that. So those four are available in Florida. How do they compare with other states? I'll just pick parole, for example, because Florida has abolished parole.
What does that mean?
In 1995.
What does that mean, they abolished parole?
Well, exactly what it sounds like. The legislature in 1983 said we will phase out parole, and they abolished parole for all new cases after 1983. Except for what's called capital murder and sexual battery. And then in fall 1995, so almost 30 years ago, it was abolished for even those crimes. So we have 101,000 people in state prisons in Florida, about 56 major institutions, including several down south. And one third of those inmates, or approximately 3,000 a month, they're coming out anyway for just what's called their end of sentence. They've served 85% of their sentence, and they're just coming out. As a practical matter, there's only about 4,600 state prison inmates still eligible for parole, which is less than 5%, because the legislature, as a matter of public policy, said any new cases after, I believe, November 1st of 1995, parole is no longer an option.
And why would that have been?
Well, you've got to think back to where we were in the 80s and 90s with sentencing guidelines, which largely replaced parole, taking some discretion away. Some people think too much discretion away from our judges, imposing mandatory minimum sentences, often for nonviolent drug offenses. I would argue that we're in a place now politically where the groups on the left and on the right and in the middle have started to retreat from that and say we've got too many people in both state and federal prison for nonviolent drug offenses. As to why the legislature abolished parole in 1995, it was just a public policy decision, and soon thereafter it was replaced by a statute that said you've got to serve 85% of your sentence. So that's kind of where we are. Mm-hmm. Could they reenact parole at any time? Of course. Have there been people that talked about that for seniors who are nonviolent? Yes. Or certain juveniles? The juvenile resentencing area is very hot topic right now. So it was the legislature's prerogative to do that 30 years ago, and essentially that's current law. So when our three parole commissioners meet in Tallahassee weekly and periodically around the state, they're largely looking at the old cases usually where there was a death, usually where there was a life sentence, usually where there was a mandatory minimum 25 years, and now that 25-year mandatory minimum has passed and people are up for parole eligibility.
Would you explain, it may seem obvious, but the difference between clemency and parole?
That's a terrific question, and frankly, you said, why did I write the book and why do I have a passion for this? Because the terminology itself is intimidating and confusing. First of all, executive clemency is the governor's power to grant mercy under the Florida Constitution. It has nothing to do with the legislature and nothing to do with the courts. In fact, if you think about it, and some of your listeners who are, I would guess, 45 or 50 or over, will remember the most famous pardon was when President Ford granted an unconditional full pardon to President Nixon
right.
in 1974 for his Watergate-related crimes. But President Nixon had not even been charged or impeached. Similar to the president's power on a federal level, the governor has power to grant executive clemency, which is completely different than parole. They have, in theory, nothing to do with each other. While they're not mutually exclusive, they're completely different. Clemency is the governor and the three members of the cabinet, whereas parole is based on the legislature's telling three parole commissioners these are the criteria to let people out. So there are eight types of clemency. One is a commutation of sentence, which is what we talk about in Chapter 2 of the book, which is exactly what it sounds like. The governor commutes or shortens a state prisoner's sentence to a term less than what the judge imposed.
So does clemency depend largely on prevailing political winds?
Well, every governor's different. And we talk about in the book, there have been approximately 150 prison commutations since 1990. I'm sorry, since 1980. And it kind of picks up into Governor Graham's term, who was, of course, from South Florida. And it shows by governor the types of cases that they commuted all the way up to the current governor, although there were some recent ones that weren't in the book that was published in January. So it is the governor's prerogative to grant mercy under the Constitution. So in a way, it is political in a good way. The legislature said these are the crimes and these are the sentences. The courts have imposed the sentence, and now the governor, he or she, can come behind the courts and behind the legislature and commute or shorten a sentence. And we can talk about some examples of those, if you wish, that have been done recently here in Florida. But yes, to an extent, I think it's what is the governor's philosophy on second chances. And I think all of them, to an extent, certainly the seven that have done 150 commutations, they saw in those individual cases an argument to be made and ultimately a decision to shorten a particular inmate's sentence.
We're speaking with Reggie Garcia. He's a Florida government lobbyist and an 80 preeminent rated attorney, which we'll get to later and explain that for us. He's an expert in clemency and parole cases, and he's written How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. Let's take a short break, and we'll be right back.
We're funded by listeners like you and by Aircomo. Does your business use compressed air or vacuum? Aircomo's professionals have been servicing the compressed air and vacuum requirements of businesses in South Florida for over 15 years. More information at aircomo.com.
You're invited to join WLRN for the hottest and hippest literary ticket, The Moth Main Stage, Thursday, October 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at the Olympia Theater. It will be an evening of true stories told live by luminaries in the arts and sciences, newsmakers and breakers, and everyday heroes. All net proceeds benefit WLRN Public Media. Tickets available at WLRN.org, the Olympia Theater box office, or olympiatheater.org.
I'm WLRN America's editor, Tim Padgett. Whether it's markets in Brazil, Marxists in Cuba, or music in Mexico, it's never been more important to understand South Florida's key connections to Latin America and the Caribbean. WLRN is committed to bringing you the stories, trends, and interviews that explain the news of the New World. Tune in to the Latin America Report on its new day, Martes, Madi, Terça-feira, Tuesday.
Welcome back to today's Topical Current. Bonnie Berman speaking with Reggie Garcia, a Florida government lobbyist and a clemency attorney. Actually, I believe your website is floridaclemencylawyer.com.
It is. Thank you.
Okay. And he's written the book, How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. And we're going to talk more about all of these areas and recent cases. And I want to get into all of this, but I was just wondering, I was thinking about you. How do you determine which prisoners to represent? There must be so many. Are you contacted by them or their families or advocates, or do you seek them out? Do you look and say, this is a case that deserves my attention?
It's a combination. Thank you. It's usually the inmate's family or sometimes the inmate directly, himself or herself, that contacts us. Me in writing, and sometimes from the family, sometimes often the family goes back to the appellate lawyer or criminal defense lawyer that assisted them. And let's put that in a little bit of perspective, because mm-hmm. we kind of glossed over it. There's 101,000 people in state prison in Florida. That doesn't include the 10 federal prisons, and that doesn't include the 67 county jails. Your partner, the Miami Herald, particularly Julie Brown, and her colleague Mary Ellen Kloss, have been doing terrific reporting mm-hmm. the last year and a half on some of the abuses, not just in South Florida, but statewide,
where
frankly we have just dishonest guards commiserating with gang members and other inmates to prey often on nonviolent, innocent inmates. So you can imagine the calls and emails we get, not that many of those are parole eligible, or not that many of those, frankly, would be good clemency cases, just because in particular clemency takes quite a while, and some of the inmates will be out, like I said, in months, if not years. But this is a whole very, very hot public policy area right now, and we're somewhat baby steps into a presidential campaign. This is one of the few political issues that I'm aware of where you have the ACLU and families against mandatory minimums on the left, and the Koch brothers on the right, and everybody in between, saying that we ought to do criminal justice reform, state prison reform, sentencing reform. So while these are four specific types procedurally for certain inmates to get out early, the bigger discussion and the bigger issues are being had both at the state level and national level about criminal justice in general, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, I was going to ask you that, your views on our criminal justice system. Do you think that most people serving time in prison deserve to be there? You mentioned before that the sentences are long on one end. I can't remember the way you put it exactly, but it indicated that you're not exactly in favor of the sentencing procedures.
Well, some of the former mandatory minimum laws, let's talk about the federal level, even though the book focuses on state commutations. The president just 2 months ago commuted, I believe, either 46 or 48 federal prison sentences, largely for nonviolent drug users who were sentenced under federal mandatory minimum guidelines, where if they had a certain quantity, particularly of crack cocaine, they got very lengthy sentences. And the federal courts and the Congress have now dealt with that to roll back those. And the president has a national initiative to try and at least look at 15,000 federal inmates' cases to see if some of those are appropriate for federal clemency. Here on state clemency, it is only one option to release a specific inmate. Now, in the past, certain governors have looked at certain areas. Governor Childs, God rest his soul, he looked at spousal abuse cases and domestic battery cases as somewhat of a subset of cases that were particularly potentially available for clemency. And of the 150 or so prison commutations in Florida recently since 1980, about half of those were done under Governor Childs' administration. So do I think there's too many people in state prison? Absolutely. Should we be diverting more people on the front end, particularly first-time offenders? You all in Dade started civil citations, which is a good thing to keep our young people out of prison to begin with. I've been to 30 state prisons, and everybody's nice to the lawyers when they're there during the week, and everybody's well-behaved. But the more young people we keep out of the system to begin with, obviously make sense, not just from a cost-saving standpoint, but give those kids a chance to get out, either keep them out to begin with or get them out quickly so that they don't reoffend and become part of the system forever.
How does a convicted felon qualify for your assistance? What must... Actually, two parts to the question. For your assistance to begin with, and then for early release, I mean, do they have to be exemplary? Are they all nonviolent offenders? Just explain that.
Sure. And again, we're talking principally about the four types of early release for state prison inmates. And by definition, no one is going to get a commutation of sentence, parole, work release, or conditional medical release if they're violent and if they're a threat to the community.
Okay.
And that makes perfect sense. By definition, they almost have to be, I wouldn't say a perfect inmate, but certainly not have what are called disciplinary reports for anything like contraband, marijuana, cell phones, certainly no fighting, certainly no drug dealing, certainly no violence against officers or other inmates. So the governor and cabinet are not going to put anybody on the street that's a safety risk. And I haven't looked at it exactly, but if you look at the 150 or so people that have been released since 1980, to my knowledge, none of those people have reoffended in any serious way. Parole, same thing. No one's going to get paroled that's a threat to public safety. Work release. Now, we've seen some abuses with work release because they're the people in blue uniforms on the side of the road that are literally out in the community doing some of that work, but they're also people, you know, behind closed doors in the community the last 6 to 9 months. And by and large, the Department of Corrections is not going to allow people that level of liberty, that level of freedom, if they perceive they're a public safety threat. Conditional medical release, we talked about. This is an area, frankly, where I think the legislature is, at least the Senate recently talked about expanding conditional medical release. Right now, you have to be either terminally ill or permanently incapacitated, and the legislature has defined both of those terms. There have been more than 200 of those types of releases over the last 18 years, and many more recently, the last 6 months. We happen to do one... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask, and we'll talk about the one you did. Do they remain under house arrest when they obtain this conditional medical release?
In effect, that's what it is,
okay.
Bonnie. And house arrest is usually on the front end, which is also called community control, so that people don't go to prison to begin with. But also, if someone's paroled or released by the parole commission, under something called conditional medical release. As the name sounds, they can put any conditions they want on the release. Frankly, usually that means somebody is terminal and has 6 to 12 months to live, and they've got a place with their family or in the community, somebody that will take care of them. So there's both a humanitarian reason to let some of our older, sick inmates out, but also a cost savings reason. I think it's about $48 a day, the average cost for a state prison inmate. And the older you get and the sicker you get, it's common sense that those costs to the state and to tax dollars go up. So every nonviolent inmate that we release under conditional medical release, assuming there's a sound release plan, that saves taxpayers money,
right,
and also lets the inmate spend their last, you know, weeks and months with loved ones instead of being in the system somewhere.
Well, it certainly seems that all of these have a humanitarian aspect as well as an economic cost-saving aspect because of the expense, as you say, of keeping anybody incarcerated in a state prison. But you were going to talk about a conditional medical release that you did recently?
Yeah, just for example, and it happened to be a South Florida case, I won't identify it with any more specificity, but 3 weeks ago we were able to get the Commission on Offender Review to release an 81-year-old man who's essentially got liver and colon cancer and is failing in his health. And the way it works is the Department of Corrections doctors diagnose that inmate, and if they've got between 6 and 12 months left to live. And of course, by definition, that's an educated medical guess. It could be less, it could be more. And in that particular case, we had 12 family members show up at the hearing and a lot of information, medical and otherwise, provided to the Commission on Offender Review. and they saw fit to release that person, like you said, essentially under house arrest, where the inmate, the released inmate, is at home. There's relatives and friends with him or her 24 hours a day, you know, with the exception of medical appointments and attending church, if you will. The person is increasingly going to be bedridden anyway. So, you know, the state saves some money, but by the same token, the family has time with the inmate to have some closure. And of course, we got to strike the right balance and make sure that person is not a public safety threat. And in this case, the parole commission found that there was absolutely no public safety threat, but they put certain conditions and reporting requirements on the family, and by definition, a parole investigator will keep tabs on that person, which is a lot less expensive than having them in one of our four or five major state institution prison hospitals.
You talk about Felix Garcia, no relation to you, in the book. I'm wondering where things stand for him today, and if you could tell us about him.
Sure. Thank you for asking. And this is a very sad case. Very quickly, this is a deaf, innocent inmate who was framed by his brother and sister for a 1981 Tampa murder. So Felix got life in prison. The parole commission is going to look at the case in another 2 years. It is a pending clemency case, although it's only been pending for a few years. We've not argued the clemency case yet. Felix was at his girlfriend's mother's home, 6 miles away from the hotel where the murder occurred, and he had a 7-hour alibi from 6:30 at night to 1:30 in the morning. As a lawyer for 30 years, this is the biggest travesty and injustice that I'm personally aware of, and everybody is working on this case for free, including his paralegal and essentially de facto mother now. A lady from Virginia named Pat Bliss has worked on this case for free for 18 years. So he has a hard time in prison. Sadly, everything you're reading in the Miami Herald is even worse for disabled inmates that can't defend themselves. When he tries to help other disabled inmates, certain inmates that are in gangs with dishonest correctional officers, there's an underground economy in Florida, which is the Florida prison system, where certain inmates are preyed upon as extra vulnerable. In Felix's case, he's deaf, so many times people sneak up behind him and jump him. Of course, there's other inmates with different type disabilities, so he's been moved around quite a bit lately, and we continue to work very hard on that case. Fox Tampa Bay, Channel 13 in Tampa, did a huge 6-minute story, which was fed out to 16 TV stations around the country this spring about Felix's case, and it continues to get state and national publicity. And we talk about it in the first book and my upcoming book as well, only because, you know, we need to inform people that that particular case is an injustice that screams for a clemency release or a parole release. But it's just as endemic of the system. The reason Felix got convicted was he didn't have a sign language interpreter at the trial. Mm. They appointed a doctor that said he was 70% deaf. They gave him a hearing aid and a loudspeaker. And frankly, he made some incriminating statements at trial. But he was framed by his brother, who was the shooter, his sister, who we think was the driver, and someone else who has since deceased, that put pressure on everybody to frame Felix. So it's a very sad case, but hopefully one day we'll prevail. He's in his early 50s, so God willing, he'll get out of prison in the next few years.
And how long has he been in?
He has served 33 years in prison of a life sentence. And again, no one put him at the scene of the crime, but they used his driver's license the next day at a pawn shop to steal to pawn some of the stolen jewelry. And in addition to that, and essentially just being framed by his brother, who was the shooter, who was trying to avoid the death penalty and did, and the sister who was under duress. We think she was in on the planning and probably was the driver. And then there was an older gentleman involved who was probably the mastermind. He has since passed away, but his brother and sister have since recanted, but unfortunately law enforcement in Tampa just can't see their way to giving him a new trial or agreeing to his release. Mm.
We're speaking with Reggie Garcia. He's a lobbyist and a clemency lawyer. He's written How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. A short break. We'll come back. We will open the phones and take your email. Stay with us. Welcome back to today's topical currents. Bonnie Berman speaking with Reggie Garcia, a lobbyist and clemency attorney. He's written How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. If you have questions, if you'd like to speak to Reggie Garcia, what are your feelings about convicted felons getting a second chance or any other matter? Perhaps restoring their civil rights, which we're going to talk about. 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio at WLRN.org. Radio at WLRN.org. Reggie, I just wanted to ask you, have you ever regretted obtaining the release of a prisoner? Have you ever had resistance or backlash from the victim or the family of a victim?
That not in my particular case, but that's a terrific question because, you know, everybody wants to know three things, be it clemency or parole. You know, how long is it going to take? What does it cost? And what are my chances of success? And one of the commutations we did early on was a DUI manslaughter case. And those are so sad because, well, obviously by definition, there's a fatality.
Right.
We worked on one for about 3 years where a 19-year-old man was the driver and a 17-year-old woman was killed. They were up in the panhandle during spring break, ended up being two terrific kids from two good families in Georgia. And in Florida, a DUI manslaughter case, the legislature has said you got to serve a minimum of 4 years, but a maximum of 15. So obviously that's one of the areas where the judges do have some good discretion because the facts are all different.
Mm-hmm.
But in that particular case, the inmate got 14 years, had served about half his term, and the mother of the deceased young woman who had lost her only child, who understandably was very raw at the sentencing and wanted the maximum sentence or close to it, once she found out our client, the inmate, had been a model prisoner and had not gotten into trouble, was availing himself of education and work training, and also, most important, would get out and not ever drink or drive, but also talk to high school and college kids about the dangers of drinking and driving, she was neutral. So the victim's positions are, frankly, the most important factor politically, usually to the governor and cabinet. And usually to the parole commission, followed only by the state attorneys. We have 20 state attorneys in Florida that are all independently elected, and they are always consulted and should be if they were the ones that prosecuted the cases. So do I know of one where someone's been released where they've committed another crime? Thank God, no, and that's not happened with any of my cases. Do the victim's position is the victim's position very, very important? Absolutely. And the parole commission, which, by the way, investigates every clemency case as well as every parole case, their investigators and examiners do their best to try and find in the cases of a fatality the surviving relatives, or in the case of a crime where there were some injuries, but the victim himself or herself is still alive. They try and find that person. So
I see. Okay.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's certainly not binding on the people making the decision, but I think it is one of the most important factors.
You write that to either get clemency or parole, you must convince elected or appointed officials that the inmate will never commit another serious crime, which, of course, I can understand, but how can you know that for sure?
Well, the best indicator, of course, is what was their crime, how long ago, what kind of inmate have they been? Have they reoffended? And by definition, if you're going to get a prison commutation, you know, you have to serve one third of your sentence before you can even apply, or one half of your sentence if it was a mandatory minimum. So by definition, there's usually been 10, 15, and in some cases, 20 years where the inmate has been incarcerated, and we can look to his or her prison record to see if they're violent. If they're violent, they're not going to have a chance at commutation or parole and shouldn't get one, which raises the larger issue. And you asked whether this was political or not. And I think it's political, but political in a good way, meaning mm-hmm. as a democracy, we elect the governor and cabinet. If you don't have the governor, you can never get clemency of any type, including a commutation, approved. But if you do have the governor, you need two of the other three members of the Florida cabinet. So if you think about that, the Attorney General of Florida, the Chief Financial Officer of Florida, the Commissioner of Agriculture of Florida, all fine people, all come with different life experiences to their positions. You need two of those three people in addition to the governor. So you can imagine how hard it is in particular to get the attorney general's support, because Ms. Bondi was a state prosecutor in Tampa for 18 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's very tough on these cases, but she's very fair. I think she looks at them on the merits of the cases themselves. So you need essentially two of those three members of the cabinet in addition to the governor to get a prison commutation. And so far, there's been three of those by this governor and this cabinet. Similar, you have three parole commissioners appointed by the governor and cabinet, confirmed by the Florida Senate, the 40 members of the Florida Senate, who serve 2 6-year terms. Most of those people have legal and law enforcement and criminal justice backgrounds. So you have, like I said, two completely different groups doing different things, but largely very conservative, not just politically, but in practice. Mm-hmm. Is this person a public safety threat? If the answer to that is no, or we're making an educated guess that it's a no, then we discuss all the other things, the release plan, et cetera, and try and convince them. But will anybody be 100% certain that a state prison inmate will never reoffend? Of course not. But there are usually indicators, largely what their behavior has been since the crime, that is somewhat predictive of how they'll act in the future.
You know, we were talking about Felix Garcia, and you were saying that you were doing all this work gratis, that many people are, you know, working for his release. I was wondering, a lot of these prisoners, how do they, if it's not too personal, how do they pay for these proceedings to get clemency or parole or whatever the case, work release, conditional medical release? They can't have the means.
Well, many of them do not, and at the risk of sounding too altruistic, you know, the book was written for state prison inmates and their families who largely cannot afford lawyers. There's a reason it's a paperback, and there's a reason it reads, frankly, like a college workbook at 124 pages with how-to checkboxes.
Right.
Because, again, the terminology and the eligibility periods and the criteria is a little bit confusing. Many of the people who seek clemency have support from, you know, in Felix's case, even though we're all working for free, the deaf community in Florida and all over America is helping him because he's deaf. In many other cases, it's usually the family members of the inmate, the spouses, the siblings, the parents, the grandparents. And by definition, you're right. Many of our state prisoners are indigent. They don't have surviving families, or if they do, they don't have means. So sometimes lawyers work on cases for free or at substantially reduced rates. And that's just part of our profession.
You've worked on many cases to obtain the restoration of civil rights for convicted felons. Will you explain what that means and what that entails and when that is granted?
I will. And we're kind of going from book one, which has been up for 7 months, to book two, which will hopefully be out in mid-October.
Okay.
And you kind of nailed it. And I certainly didn't invent the title, but I think it captures what we're trying to assist people with. The next book is called Second Chances, and it's about Florida pardons, restoration of civil rights, and gun rights. And those are the other types of clemency. Every convicted felon in Florida, regardless of whether they had only probation, only house arrest, only county jail, or only state prison, or in some cases a combination of those four things, particularly for second and third offenses, every convicted felon in Florida loses four valuable rights. One, to vote, which gets the most attention. Two, to serve on a jury. Three, to seek elected office. And four, you lose the right to not just use, but to possess or own firearms. So the other types of clemency also done by the governor and cabinet, aside from prison commutations, the three most popular are what are called pardons, and that wraps three things together, firearm authority and restoration of civil rights, firearm authority alone, or restoration of civil rights alone. And each of those have different eligibility periods.
So if your civil rights are restored, you do get to vote, you do get to serve on a jury.
You do get to seek elected office, but you do not get, and this is a very important distinction, and this is a function of both state and federal law, if you get your civil rights restored, you do not get firearm authority. Mm-hmm. And if there was a Florida crime, the governor can separately restore your firearm authority, but if it was a federal crime or a conviction out of state in one of our other 49 states, only those state governors or only the president in the case of a federal conviction can restore firearm authority or grant a full pardon.
I just realized we need to take one last break. We're speaking with Reggie Garcia. He's a lobbyist and Florida lobbyist and an expert in clemency and parole cases. How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release is the name of his book. Just a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Topical Currents. Speaking with Reggie Garcia, a lobbyist and a clemency attorney. How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release, excuse me, is the name of his book. And again, our number, if you have questions, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. We have an emailer. Michael wants to know, Reggie, if you don't think that prison reform and deprivatization of prison takes priority over trying to get early release for inmates.
Well, they're certainly not mutually exclusive and arguably are complementary goals. We have 56 prisons in Florida, major prisons. Seven of those, I believe, are privatized, meaning the legislature made a public policy decision 15 or 20 years ago. I believe if the private sector can achieve a minimum of 7% operational savings, so there are specific national prison companies. I believe they're the two big ones are public companies that operate. I'm not sure about here in South Florida, but I know there's several in North and Central Florida that are privately operated. You know, if you're an inmate, you would see, in my opinion, and I've visited them, very, very little distinction there. I think South Bay, now that we're talking about it, might be in your listener area in West Palm Beach County, is a private one. Gadsden for women is a private one near Tallahassee, but there's seven total.
How do you feel about them?
Well, I'm really not here to talk about,
okay,
you know, the private versus public, because other than having periodic attorney visits in all of them or some of them, I frankly don't have a basis to know whether they're by definition they have to meet these 7% savings, and they have pretty stringent contracts through the Department of Management Services. But the larger public policy issues are, for instance, to the legislature's credit, they expanded civil citations this past session to say, in effect, let's give our law enforcement officers an opportunity, even if it's a second or third offense, to issue a warning or to do some diversion. Frankly, that started, to my knowledge, in South Florida with the good work that former juvenile director Wamsley Walters did here, and then took that program statewide with the legislature support. So out of 67 counties, I think we now have 60 that have some form of civil citation program. Again, reducing the prison population by our young people on the front end, which is a good thing. Certainly looking at sentencing reform, there's been some of that, particularly in certain pill areas where you have drug users that are addicted to certain Schedule I narcotics. Before, if you had a certain number of pills or if there were a certain number of weight, you were getting these mandatory sentences of 5, 7, in some cases 10 or 15 years, when maybe 3 is more appropriate. The legislature has made some changes in that area. The Senate, at least, has voted this past session to expand conditional medical release to elderly and infirm inmates. The House did not agree, but I'm hopeful that issue will come back this coming session, which starts in January of 2016. So I think all of these strategies complement each other, keep a lot more people out on the front end. The people that are in, give them education and training so that they don't reoffend when they get out. I mean, the data is anywhere from 26% to 43% of the people released from state prisons come back within the next 3 years. So think about that. That's a disaster.
Number one, they're new crime. 26% recidivism.
Correct. Anywhere between 26%, which is DOC's numbers, who track people over a longer period of time, mm-hmm. and then some of the groups that have looked at it think it may be as high as 43. But right. So in other words, if anywhere from 26% to 43% of those 33,000 people that are walking out of state prison this year, if 26 to 43% of those come back, and that's what the research shows, number one, by definition, there's new crime victims. There's a cost there. Number two, we're paying, you know, the second or third, in many cases, fourth time for medical and housing and transportation, et cetera, for a new state prison inmate who is really an old state prison inmate. So any strategies that keep people out on the front end and divert them many times to drug and substance abuse programs, and then also people that get training and rehabilitation while we have them in state prison for 3, 5, 7 years so they don't reoffend right. or recidivate, then that's not just taxpayer dollars that are saved, but those are crime victims that no longer are crime victims.
Siobhan wants you to discuss what relief open to those who cannot pay court or jail costs and administrative fees.
Okay. Generally, putting aside for a second, and what we're talking about here, there's fees, there's costs, but there's also restitution. And every case is different, but in the case of state prison inmates, particularly if they're indigent, sometimes those are reduced to what's called a civil judgment or civil lien. And then you have a state prisoner who, by definition, can't make money or much money in prison to pay those off. So that's one scenario. The other scenario is people that are convicted felons but maybe did not go to prison, maybe had jail, which is usually 1 year or less, mm-hmm. house arrest or community control or just probation, they, by definition, are out and in society and employable and should be working to reduce whatever those fines and costs and restitution costs are. Sometimes the number is prohibitively expensive and some people never get close. Some people do their best to reduce those and pay those off over time. And obviously that's the preferred method.
And Bradley, we touched on this. I guess that's what your book is going to be, wants to know if voting rights can be restored without the services of a lawyer.
Yes, they can. That's a terrific question. Restoration of civil rights, you must wait 5 years from the conclusion of prison or probation, whichever is last. In the case of about 35 more serious violent crimes, there's a 7-year waiting period, but it's a 1-page application, and I believe they've even waived the need now for certified court records, so the court records don't have to be certified. One of the good things the legislature actually did do, if you've got to go get certified copies, is Chapter 940, actually Chapter 940.04, says that the clerk's office should give you those records for free. So if there's some cost considerations, they can get the records for free at the clerk's office if they tell them it's for a clemency case, and B, they can go on the Commission on Offender Review website and see all of the applications, including what is just a 1-page application for restoration of civil rights, and you do not need a lawyer.
Okay, that's great. Barbara in Dania Beach, we're going to take your call, but we just have about just very, very little time, not even a minute.
Okay.
So please go ahead. Talk to Reggie Garcia.
Hi, Mr. Garcia. I just wanted to ask if can a former inmate that got their green card revoked apply for pardons or restoration of civil rights, even if they're not an American, in this case, a Cuban born person that can't be deported, but he's had a perfect conduct in 15 years that he's been out of prison?
That is a very good question for the listeners. Essentially, an immigration situation for a non-U.S. citizen, and some people are here on work visas, and some people, there's an issue of whether they're deportable. That's a very complicated area of federal law that mixes with state law. I am not an immigration expert. There are many good immigration lawyers. We try and tackle that in the second book, but the short answer is certain crimes, even for non-residents, are available for pardons, but certain crimes are not. So I hate to punt on this one, but I'd rather give you no information than bad information. You really need to consult an immigration lawyer and ask them that question, and that's something we do tackle in the second book, which is coming out in mid-October.
I look forward to your second book then.
Okay, thank you for calling, Barbara. Okay, well, unfortunately, we're out of time. There are a lot more questions I have for you. What does it mean to be an AV preeminent rated attorney, by the way?
Yeah, thank you. That's a group called Martindale Hubbell. It's essentially peer review. There's approximately 83,000 lawyers in Florida and several thousand judges, and periodically we all get to peer review each other. And I believe my Martindale Hubbell rating, which is the highest you can get, has been that way since 2001. So it's essentially a peer review rating.
Okay. Well, I wish we had longer, but we want to thank Reggie Garcia. He's a Florida government lobbyist and an AV preeminent rated attorney, expert in clemency and parole cases. Website, floridaclemencylawyer.com. And his latest book is How to Leave Prison Early, Florida Clemency, Parole, and Work Release. And your next book is coming out
mid-October, and the current one is up on Amazon for $4 for a Kindle ebook and $13 for a paperback. And the next book will have the same prices in mid-October.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Garcia. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Bonnie.
And thanks for joining us. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction provided by online producer Paul Leary. You might want to listen to the program again or have a friend listen to it. You can download free audio archives at our website, WLRN.org, and more information links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Join us tomorrow for when we visit with experts from the Switchboard of Miami and deal with a topic they frequently handle, suicide. Bonnie Berman for Joseph Cooper. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.